Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Ari Berman, a contributing writer for The Nation magazine and an investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute. He has written extensively about American politics, foreign policy, and the intersection of money and politics. He's the author of Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics. And he has an article at both The Huffington Post and Tom Dispatch, the 0.000063% election, how the politics of the super rich became American politics. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ari Berman.
Thanks for having me again, Ian.
So this is one-upping the Occupy movement, the notion that they've brought up the divide between the 99% and the 1%, which seems to have become a part of the kind of political zeitgeist, if you will. Now you're telling us, Ari, that it's not 1%, it's 0.00063% that really are shaping our elections.
Well, as Stephen Colbert joked, Occupy Wall Street needs to change their signs because it is we are the 0.99999937%, in fact. And the way that I calculated these numbers is if you look at who's giving money to the super PACs, which are quickly overtaking the candidates as the most important entity in American politics, 196 donors have given nearly 80% of the money to super PACs by giving $100,000 or each. And so that's how you get 0.000063%.
So this, of course, is early days, right? I mean, these are dueling billionaires, mostly in the Republican camp. What's going to happen when they settle on a candidate, the Republicans? And Obama's already said that he's going the super PAC route as well. So is this just a warm-up, what we're seeing now?
Yeah, I mean, it is true. This is really just an early arms race that is likely going to escalate into an all-out war because we have the Republican primary, but the money has been spread among a bunch of different candidates. Romney had by far the most money. If you look at his super PAC, he raised $30 million last year. 98% of that money came from $25,000 donations or more, which I thought was pretty staggering. And 10 people gave Romney $1 million. Now, there's nothing to stop any donor from giving $100 million. There's nothing to stop a donor from giving $1 billion if they wanted to either Barack Obama, Mitt Romney, or anyone else. They could give it to a super PAC, at which point they probably would have to disclose it unless it was done through some shell corporation. Or even more disturbingly, they could give it to a 501c4 organization, which is supposed to exist for the purpose of social welfare, and then they don't even have to disclose the donation. So we could see hundreds of millions of dollars funneled into the 2012 election in secret donations.
And in your article, Ari Berman, you're suggesting here that what we've seen from Adelson, the casino billionaire in Las Vegas, who's given $5 million to Gingrich, and his wife gave another $5 million, and he said that he's being a bit churlish about how much more he's going to give to Gingrich, but he said if Romney becomes the presidential candidate, he'll give him money. And you're suggesting that somebody like him, who's hell-bent on preventing the Obama administration from standing in the way of an Israeli attack on Iran's nuclear facilities, could give $100 million for that matter.
He could. I mean, Adelson is a super wealthy individual. He is one of the 10 wealthiest individuals in America. He is obsessed with one issue, that is Israel. He doesn't want anything that will create peace between Israel or Palestine, and he doesn't want the U.S. to stop Israel from attacking Iran. And so he's willing to spend as much money as it takes to get someone in there who can replace the Obama administration and have a more hawkish government that will unilaterally support Israel. And so if that's his one issue, he's going to do whatever it takes. But there's other issues. I mean, who knows? If someone who runs an oil company wants to gut a regulation, I mean, they can give as much as they want. Not only on the presidential level, but also on the congressional level, where I think super PACs are going to have the most impact because they can really come in, flood a congressional campaign on the airwaves with negative ads and really swing a close election much more effectively than they can in a presidential election, which is effectively nationalized.
So you mentioned the 501c4, Ari Berman, and that's an IRS non-profit umbrella that's meant for civic leagues or organizations not organized for profit but operate exclusively for the promotion of social welfare. This has become corralled by super PACs and it become their favorite conduit because, one, they get anonymity, but two, don't they get a 40% tax write-off? I mean,
they're tax-exempt social welfare organizations, and this is really a complete racket that is going on because these groups were not intended to function in this manner. And the 501c4s can't be as direct as super PACs can in terms of running ads. So the super PACs can run ads directly against candidates saying vote against Barack Obama. The 501c4s are limited more to issue ads, but they're de facto ads for and against candidates. And you have a situation now where, take for example, American Crossroads, which is the Karl Rove founded group that's probably the largest conservative outfit on the right in the 2012 election. They have a super PAC and they have a 501c4. And the 501c4, which is known as Crossroads GPS, has raised twice as much money as the other organization, all from secret donations. So that's, I think, even more disturbing phenomenon than the super PACs themselves.
And your article points out, Ari Berman, that the Washington Post found that 40% of the TV ads in the presidential race so far come from these tax-exempt social welfare groups. And clearly, they're designed for charity and philanthropy. And there's an incentive for rich people to give money for the right reason. But now there's an incentive for them to give money, arguably for the wrong reason.
Yeah, and this is really something that I think either the court, although the Supreme Court is unlikely to do so, or certainly the Federal Election Commission really needs to investigate, because this is a perversion of the law, and you could argue that it's even a perversion of the Citizens United decision itself. And they've very skillfully exploited a loophole to funnel even more money into the political system, and this time in absolute total secret.
So I was just talking to Senator Bernie Sanders a couple of days ago, and I mentioned to him that, you know, I get all this progressive mail solicitations, and it seems to be one of the great tragedies on the American left is that you've got all these wonderful young people who would be great political activists, but all the interest groups on the left ever do is ask them for money, which they don't have. And all that energy and talent is not being used. But that's another issue. But the long and the short of it is a lot of the stuff that's the mail I'm getting lately is people having fundraisers to overturn Citizens United. And I'm thinking, well, what's the money going towards? I mean, there's no strategy out there. There's no coherent national movement. Sanders agreed that there's not a constitutional amendment is an awfully high bar and takes a long time and that there has to be stuff done sooner. So what do you see on the radar in terms of a workable way to get to that goal of overturning Citizens United without having to spend years trying to get a constitutional amendment through?
Yeah, well, I agree with you that a constitutional amendment is probably very far off if it would ever happen. At the same time, legislation that could pass the Congress that would, for example, incentivize small donations based on the Fair Elections Now Act doesn't look likely to move anytime soon, especially with Republicans in control of the House. But honestly, even when Democrats were in control of Congress, they weren't moving this type of legislation. You have court challenges to Citizens United. Montana is challenging the law right now. It certainly doesn't seem like this Supreme Court, which gave us Citizens United, is going to challenge that anytime soon. But if you had a different Supreme Court, for example, if Obama's reelected, you have a different Supreme Court, you could see a change there. Now, would they wholly overturn Citizens United? I mean, I'm not sure about that, but they could certainly start chipping away at it, and then you could have the beginnings of a more comprehensive strategy. But I do think, Ian, unfortunately, we're going to have to probably go through this election. It's probably going to have to get worse before everyone is aware of the problem and enough people are willing to do something about it, because people have always known there was too much money in politics. But I do think the one good thing that has come out of the whole super PAC era is that finally, people have had something they can latch onto as an example of what's wrong with the problem. And you've had, for example, Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart really illustrate how perverse the system has become. And after all this money is spent, after all the negative TV ads, I do really think that the American people are going to be so fed up that they are going to demand bolder solutions, and that could become one of the next manifestations of the Occupy movement.
And of course, the irony is, Ari Berman, that if you were able to overturn Citizens United and went back to the status quo ante, you wouldn't be in much better shape. I mean, it was pretty...
No, you wouldn't, and that's the problem. I mean, before you can get any sort of reform, you have to overturn Citizens United because it's such a barrier to any sort of progressive change. But it is true that the system as it was before was very imperfect to begin with. And so really overturning Citizens United just has to become the beginning of the discussion, because then there's all the other steps of what do you do. And as I said, I still think that some form of publicly financed elections is the best way to go. We're never going to get money completely out of the system, but we have to figure out some way to incentivize candidates to go the small donor route, because right now they have absolutely no incentive, particularly in the super PAC era, to seek out small donations at all.
Again, I'm speaking with Ari Berman, who's a contributing writer for The Nation magazine and an investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute. So given now that on the Republican side, we've seen Gingrich's sugar daddy there with Adelson and his wife, and there's been a difficult to know who Romney's sugar daddies are, not that he himself, being a quarter billionaire, is not short of some spare change himself. But the race that's shaping up now in a couple of weeks in Michigan is interesting, and it's brought out the Santorum's sugar daddy, this rather strange fellow, Foster Freeze.
He offered his
I mean, it's amazing to think the Republicans are running on an issue of banning contraception. But he offered his insight into contraception, quoting Foster Freeze. This is Rick Santorum's sugar daddy. "This contraceptive thing, my gosh, it's such inexpensive. Back in my days, they used Bayer aspirin for contraception. The gals put it between their knees, and it wasn't that costly."
I mean, that is unbelievable. And I mean, that shows, I think that's the best two-word argument I've ever heard against super PACs, which is Foster Freeze himself, because you have a guy like that who, just by virtue of having a lot of money, is able to have an unbelievably disproportionate influence on the American election. And this guy is clearly crazy. I mean, he's out to lunch on basic public health principles, as is the candidate he's backing, Rick Santorum. And you have a strange situation where, in many ways, Rick Santorum versus Mitt Romney is a David versus Goliath battle, because Romney has so much more money, but Santorum is also being propped up by a billionaire as well. So it's sort of like you have one billionaire versus Santorum on Santorum's side, and then you have a bunch of billionaires and mega millionaires on the Romney side. But even insurgents nowadays have to have their own billionaire, which just shows you how warped the American political system really is right now.
Well, but isn't it extraordinary, though, Ari Berman, that Romney, who was all but a shoo-in in Michigan, the state in which he was born, in which his father was a governor and the head of an auto company, that Romney would be able to spoil his own chances by writing an op-ed in the Detroit Daily News on last Tuesday, criticizing Obama's bailout of General Motors and Chrysler. Here we have today General Motors posting record profits. My understanding of Detroit and of Michigan and broadly is that everybody thinks that, thank God, Obama rescued the auto business. The banks weren't about to do anything. They couldn't get any private equity to save themselves. It's just amazing to see that Santorum, who's just arrived in the state today, has done no campaigning, is actually ahead in pretty much all of the polls.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's hard for me to know whether the Romney's opposition to the auto bailout will hurt him among the Michigan Republicans, who tend to be more anti-bailout than the state in general. It's certainly hurting Romney in the general election, where the latest polling shows he's losing to Obama in Michigan by 18 points, which is just a massive blowout if those numbers hold. But I do think if you look beyond Michigan, Romney's money is really going to come in handy, because you have Super Tuesday shortly thereafter on March 6th, 10 contests vote that day. And that's really where the money advantage that Romney has, the ability to have a campaign organization in all those various states, to be able to be on the air in all those different states, especially if it becomes a nastier contest, could really overwhelm Santorum. So I do think momentarily Santorum could get the advantage of Romney, but I don't think in the long run that he's still going to be able to overtake him. And I think the super PAC money is a big reason why Romney has such a large advantage. It's true that money can't necessarily make you likable, and it doesn't necessarily win you an election. But it's also true that it gives you an enormous advantage. And in the super PAC era, money, I think, is more important than ever right now.
And that's proving to be the case in Arizona, where Romney's outspent Santorum massively, and there's something of a Mormon network there as well in that western state, which he's using to his advantage. Just in closing, though, Ari Berman, for the longest time, of course, a lot of progressives thought it was a great thing, that it would be a gift from the gods, if you will, that Obama got to run against either Gingrich or Santorum or Herman Cain or that Perry or that whole Bachman, that whole kind of clown show that preceded, that have been somewhat winnowed since then. But the more I look at Romney, I think maybe he'd be even an easier candidate for Obama and a better candidate to run against, to frame the disparity in wealth in this country and to have somebody that just simply can't get out of his own way.
Yeah, I mean, so I hear some Democrats actually saying that right now, because the campaign against Romney has already been written. It's that Romney is a 1% candidate. It's in his background. It's in his policy positions. It's in pretty much everything about him that Romney is really an unabashed supporter of Wall Street and the 1%, or as we've mentioned in this article, the 0.0001%. With Santorum, it's a different kind of campaign. It's more about Santorum's extreme views on social issues. It's more about his views on women and gay rights and things like that. And it's less about his views on economic policy, which aren't that different from Romney's. It's just that we don't know that much about him, and they haven't played a big role in his campaign. I still think the Obama administration would much rather run against Santorum than Romney. You take $200 million off the table if Romney is not the nominee. You take a whole organization that's been preparing for 4 years to run in a general election. So I think the White House would still much rather run against Santorum, but it is true that Romney is looking like a weaker candidate every single day.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Ari Berman.
Thanks, Ian. Appreciate it.
Again, I've been speaking with Ari Berman, who is a contributing writer for The Nation magazine and an investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute. He's written extensively about American politics, foreign policy, and the intersection of money and politics. He's the author of Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics, and has an article at The Huffington Post and at Tom Dispatch, The 0.0000063% Election, How the Politics of the Super Rich Became American Politics. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back in a moment talking about the UN General Assembly vote condemning Syria.